Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, July 19th, 2013. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by Jackie McIntosh.
Hello.
And Jenny Rempel.
Hey.
Welcome, both of you. Alyssa, Tim, and Cynthia are away today. So today's show is the Animal Rights Conference and Vegetarian Summer Fast Report Show. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. We encourage the movement toward a world where non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. And in addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at cooperadio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. So I've been away for the last five shows. Don't know if you noticed. Jackie, you were here. I was on vacation first for a week in Bermuda, and then I spent a week in Washington, D.C., attending the annual National Animal Rights Conference there, along with Jenny, who was also there. And then after that, I headed to nearby Johnstown, Pennsylvania, to attend my first ever vegetarian Summerfest conference. So today, I'm going to bring some of my conference experiences back to you, and in today's show, Jenny and I will be offering our thoughts on our experiences at the AR conference this year, and we will be playing a few audio clips from the great Gary Francione-Bruce Friedrich debate that took place at the conference as a first-time ever event there. The debate was on the topic of abolitionism versus welfareism when it comes to protecting animals. And moving on, I will be reviewing the Vegetarian Summerfest Conference and also playing some audio clips from just three of the many talks that were presented there. These will be clips from Milton Mills' talk entitled, Are Humans Designed to Eat Meat?, Harold Brown's talk, The Interconnectedness of Life, and Karen Davis' talk, Moving Beyond the Rhetoric of Apology of Animal Rights to Affirmative Activism. Those segments are coming up soon, but first, I want to extend an official welcome back to you, Jenny. So, welcome back from your 3 months in New York City, and please tell us all about it.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I would love to. Actually, I'll be giving a lot more details about my trip to New York City, hopefully next week on the show, where I'll be doing a New York-themed show. I've got some interviews that I did in the city and some great reviews of what it's like to be vegan in New York. So if you have questions or things that you want to know about what it's like to be vegan in New York, feel free to tweet us at AnimalVoicesYVR on Twitter or comment on our Facebook page, Animal Voices on Facebook. And I'd be happy to fill in all of your inquiries and questions related to those things. It was a lot of fun overall, and I had a really great time. I'm hoping to go back there soon. Actually, I have a family member who's American, so I might be able to get some citizenship going there.
Someone told me yesterday that you said you want to be an American.
Oh,
I'm not going to tell you who told me that.
That's so funny.
She's like, I saw Jenny and she says she wants to become an American.
It's like a controversial thing here. Well, I never would have thought I would have heard myself say that if you'd asked me about like 6 months ago. But after living in New York, it was like a really great experience and a really great place for me and like with my interests. And being vegan is amazing there too. And several other cities in the U.S. are really well set up for that too. So yeah, I'm afraid to admit that I do want to be an American. Maybe my dreams will come true one day.
At least half American.
Yeah, you can have dual citizenship. It's great. Why choose, you know?
So you were living in New York City. What's the vegan and animal rights scene like there?
It's really awesome. Yeah, there's like tons of restaurants. It's really great. And for me, too, it was a really cool experience because I was actually doing an internship related to animal rights. I was working full-time for Mercy for Animals, which is an organization dedicated to exposing factory farming through undercover investigations and then pursuing legal justice for animals. So it was a really awesome experience to be able to really like devote my life both professionally and personally to help animals there.
Right, you were doing that as part of your schooling, is that correct?
I could have received course credit for it, but I didn't really need the extra credit and it wouldn't have really helped me in any way. So yeah, I just did it out of
the goodness of my life experience.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't even realize that.
Goodness of my desire to live in New York City.
Oh. And to eat lots of delicious food.
Yes.
And to do so many. You went to like the vegan prom there, and you took part in the seed vegan experience
conference, yeah,
conference, and like you really did as much as you could and got everything that you could out of your experience.
I was
there,
immersed. So, it was like a baptism of an animal rights activist being surrounded by the waters of animal justice.
I just remember seeing all those amazing pictures of food that you were posting on Facebook. I was like, wow, Jenny's having a good time.
And Instagram, jremps_, check me out.
Well, thank you for that. Now, Jackie, you and Alyssa have started an animal rights / vegan support group circle here in Vancouver. I want to know all about that. Please do tell us.
So this past Sunday, I was fortunate enough to help facilitate, along with Alyssa, an animal rights support circle. So it was the first introduction of what we hope to be an ongoing project to help build a sense of community, as well as to provide support for challenges that many people face and may not have anyone they can go to discuss these types of issues without judgment. There was a wide range of people there. Around 15 people showed up. There was mostly vegans, but there was a few that were vegetarians, new vegetarians, just kind of learning and wanting to learn more and just meet more people. Which was great, and there was a lot of people too that were, you know, kind of just in Canada temporarily, which I thought was awesome. You might as well meet people and share our different experiences. So we started off with a mini kind of potluck on a big blanket and just letting people chat a little bit with each other and relax. And then we had a brief grounding meditation and moved on to our discussions. So we discuss topics like what kind of support do we currently have? Are our families, friends supportive of us? How do we deal with and process trauma? And what inspires us to keep going? So we just kind of discussed all of those topics and went around a circle and each shared our own experiences. And it was amazing because everyone was so compassionate with each other and so supportive. It was exactly how I envisioned the term support circle basically. And it was really amazing to me how quickly everyone became open and comfortable with each other and sharing both, you know, lighthearted, jokey things as well as emotional, deep things. And like I said, everyone was so supportive, and it was just so respectful. It was really inspiring to me, and I was so happy to be a part of this. And Jenny, you also joined us. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. I actually wasn't expecting on attending because it seemed like a cool idea, but I've got a lot of other things on my plate. And then I was downtown last week, and the Vancouver Aquarium had a display with a beaver skin that really offended and disturbed me. And after that, a lot of people on Facebook that I didn't realize were big fans of the aquarium were very harsh towards my actions in speaking out for animals in that setting. So decided I needed some support.
Yeah, sounds like you needed some support there, don't we all at different times of our life?
I think so, and I think it's something like, especially in the activist community, we think it's somewhat like a selfish thing to take care of ourselves, but I think it's so important because how can we help other beings when we ourselves are struggling with things, or even just you know, don't feel like we have anyone in our life or enough people in our life that really are truly supportive, which I think a lot of us struggle with, either in the workplace and with for our families or even with some of our friends. Like, we don't all have that support network.
Yeah, you know, it's true that some of us have chosen to lead lives of, you know, caring for and fighting for the animals and not supporting exploitation as many people do, whether it's on purpose or not. Mm-hmm. And that decision doesn't necessarily come as part of our external influences. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, sometimes it's very easy to feel alone in this situation.
And isn't that the funniest, well, not funny in a ha-ha way, but isn't that kind of funny that the people that are compassionate and not wanting to exploit beings are the ones that often are feeling isolated or, you know, like the outside
it's
of the norm?
Sad.
It's really sad.
I think it's
really
interesting
sad.
And there's a sense of dissonance there, but I think that's changing at the same time. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to future. So.
Yeah, tell us what you have planned for the future. It sounds like you went over like everything at this one. Like, that must have been a pretty long meeting.
Well,
what plans do you have for the future?
Well, this one was kind of just an introduction, kind of getting to know each other, but it is open. We are welcoming more people to join us, and we're not sure what we're going to be doing exactly for the next support circle yet. We'll kind of just, I guess, see how things come together. But I think the long-term goal is to have somewhat of themed different nights. Some, like, that was my, I guess, my thought towards it is having, like, one night towards dealing with family and friends, one night towards, you know, how to deal with activism in a compassionate manner and things like that. So our next support circle session will be July 28th. And that will be at Trout Lake from 6:30 to 9. So if you feel like you could use some community support or just want to know more like-minded people or even just interested in community building, we welcome everyone from seasoned activists to anyone just making transitions to a more compassionate lifestyle. If you care about non-human animals and want to make a difference for them, please join us. And you can join by emailing radioanimalvoices@gmail.com and just ask for Alyssa and Jackie and mention that you're interested in our support circle.
Thanks for that, Jackie. Mm-hmm.
Drishti Point is a radio program featuring interviews about yoga, spirituality, and wellness. Our guests include yogis, authors, musicians, healers, and renowned spiritual teachers. Tune in Tuesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. for your weekly dose of yoga wisdom and inspiration.
All right, so I'll share a bit about what's going on in Vancouver for the next couple weeks. So, again, every Friday from 7 to 9 a.m. at Commercial Drive and Hastings Street, actually on Hastings Street, outside the storage facility and slaughterhouse, there will be the chicken vigils. I attended this morning, as I try to as much as I can, and like always, very positive support. There's a lot of, it seemed like there was more new drivers passing by us today, or people that were very interested in what we had to say and show. So, yes, please come join us. And on the same day, Fridays, there is the Shark Fin Demos. So every single Friday night from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., join Vancouver Animal Defense League at 3888 Main Street, which is Sun Sui Wah Restaurant in Vancouver, where they will be speaking out for the sharks and against the horrific shark fin industry. 100 million sharks are actually killed every year for their fins, simply to be served in a soup, or, you know, it also is used for... for other medicinal things, but the soup that is served at Sun Sui Wah Restaurant. And also next Saturday, the 27th, is Veg Fest Vancouver. That's Saturday, July 27th. Animal Voices will be there.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, we will.
Yeah, we will. We'll have a table, and I believe we'll be speaking at some point. I don't know about what, but we'll be speaking. We will have gifts to give away and face painting and all kinds of fun stuff. So come check us out. That's from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and that is located on Granville Street between Dunsmuir and Smythe.
It's going to be really busy. That street is going to be packed next week, so I think that's awesome. Mm-hmm. I wasn't at the Veg Fest last year because I was away. But from the pictures that I saw, it was really, really well attended. That's like tourist central in summer.
Well, there's a lot of passerbys that are like, mm-hmm. what's going on? And then like, oh, it's all these vegans.
Mm-hmm. It's been growing every year, so I'm excited to see where they take it this coming year.
Yeah, it seems like there's going to be a lot of different vendors this year as mm-hmm. well. I noticed some Vancouver Veg Fest. I can't remember what the website is, but if you Google it, you can find it. They have a list of all the different sponsors.
It's vegfestvancouver.com.
There you go, and you can check out to see what kind of vendors are going to be there. And the speaking component sounds interesting.
They took that away last year, and so they brought it back, so I think that'll be really great. Yeah. I'm actually giving a talk, so come check me out.
So lots of talks from the Animal Voices team. And also the same day, Vancouver Aquarium Protest with Empty the Tanks. So this is a joint protest with the International Empty the Tanks Protest Day, which is the first of it, of this kind. And it is from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., of course, outside the Vancouver Aquarium. It will take place rain or shine, so dress appropriately. Please join.
It's not going to rain next Saturday.
Well, let's hope not, but if it does, just be prepared. So, yes, please speak out against the Vancouver Aquarium and their whale jails and join No Whales in Captivity for this demonstration.
So from July the 27th to the 30th of this year, I was in Washington, D.C. to attend the Animal Rights National Conference, which is put on by the Farm Animal Rights Movement nonprofit organization, who we've had on the show here before. And Jenny, you were there with me for your very first time. And the Animal Rights Conference is an annual event that has been occurring for many, many years and typically alternates locations between Washington, D.C. and the Los Angeles area. I used to only attend it myself when it was held at the near LA location, but as of last year, I decided to commit to attending it every year now as a personal commitment to bettering myself for the animals. It's an event attracting hundreds of animal activists from all over the continent and throughout the world even, and this year actually brought a record-breaking 1,100 attendees to the event, which was just fantastic. So 1,100 people who care about animals gathered at the AIR conference this year to network, share ideas, attend a plethora of different talks on a diverse range of topics to do with animal rights issues, and to leave the event completely rejuvenated and inspired to either continue or begin their work in helping the animals to the best of their abilities. At least that's how I regard the results of what the conference offers. And Jenny, I'm curious to know what you took away from the conference this year, as this was your very first year there.
Yeah, I really thought it was really great to just meet so many interesting people, and there was really like a lot of really diverse people there. There were some new activists and also people who'd been part of the movement for almost their whole lives, some folks. So it was really cool just to connect with all these different people. And you're right, actually one of my favorite sessions was a session put on by some international animal rights advocates that had come from Europe, and they were talking about some of the advocacy efforts going on over there that I never would have found out about if I hadn't been able to speak to them one-on-one. So that was pretty cool.
What did you think about the just sort of the networking opportunities and opportunities to meet and connect with other activists just from all over North America? Because, you know, we're pretty isolated here in Vancouver, at least that's how I feel.
Well, I think one of the challenges of the conference is there is so much going on. And when I looked at the program, I was like, oh, okay, right. Well, I've seen the sessions, like, this seems like it'll be a good conference. But it was actually so full because I didn't want to attend all of the sessions because I wanted to be speaking with and networking with people. And there was a bit of a trade show going on, too. I got some yummy tofurkey samples. They've got new quiche products that was pretty good there. So, yeah, there was just a lot going on. Specifically, I really liked, there was a session that Melanie Joy did. She did her PhD working for animals, and we've had her on the show before. She spoke about understanding the mentality of eating animals. It was really great just to hear her talk and her ideas from her firsthand, and she recommended some other really cool resources. That was awesome. I also really liked Utilizing Psychology for Social Change by Nick Cooney. He was speaking about changing behavior through the application of social psychology tools. That was really funny for me because about a year ago I was in a course and I really wanted to know how to use the psychology of behavioral change to help promote people to become vegan. And he spoke about that very specifically in actionable items proven through the scientific method with research to support his ideas. So that was really cool.
And I'm going to lend you his book because I read it because we had him on the show last year. So if people are interested more in learning about that, do check out that interview, Nick Cooney, on animalvoices.org. The AR conference itself, it provides a program that is just jam-packed from the Thursday evening to the Sunday night. Plenary sessions started out and concluded each day with keynote speakers presenting to the crowd on themed topics such as the history of animal rights, examining strategies for animal liberation and the state of the animal rights movement. And during the day's activities, as Jenny was referring to, you could attend a choice of four different workshops or presentations geared towards a specific theme or track that was each hour. So the different tracks were such as issues, organizing, tactics, and reports. Those were the main themes that were mostly covered, and each presentation sort of fell under that. So depending on what you were interested in, you know, you could choose to follow that track or skip between them, depending on whatever you wanted. It's whatever that interests you. I wanted to say that I've been to the conference, I think, five times now, so it's getting a little bit easier for me to choose different, like, the workshops that I want to attend every year and to maybe take a little bit of time out to socialize and enjoy the tofurkey samples, because usually I just want to go to everything, right? And I want to just soak in as much information as possible. But the two major highlights of the conference for me this year were the talks that were presented by well-known animal abolitionist Gary Francione. He is a very outspoken and controversial leader in the animal rights movement, and he advocates staunchly for the abolition of animal exploitation without supporting welfare reforms for the animals. And in a first-time ever appearance at the Animal Rights Conference this year, he presented a plenary session talk on the Saturday morning to a packed audience of, I would say, over 500 people. And then later that day, he and Farm Sanctuary's Bruce Friedrich went head-to-head in participating in a debate with each other, where each person had 12 minutes to state their case for the best approach in helping the animals, Gary Francione for abolitionism, and Bruce Friedrich for welfareism. So here we have for you clips of most of each of their talks, as was presented in this very popular event at the conference. We'll start first with Gary Francione, who went first, and then after that will be Bruce Friedrich.
The bottom line is, I disagree very, very much with what's going on in this movement, but as with Bruce and other people here who promote a welfarist or regulationist sort of agenda, I have no doubt that they're doing this because they sincerely believe it's right, and I don't in any way question their integrity. I do, however, think they are incorrect and they're pushing this movement in the wrong direction. Now, look, a reformist or regulationist agenda requires that we accept as a general matter that the primary focus or the primary interest is reducing suffering, and we're going to put the killing issue off. So we're going to focus on regulating use so that we can try to reduce suffering. But we're going to continue to allow use, and indeed, certain ways to promote use. We're going to promote use because we want to take a position that the agenda, that the movement focus ought to be on reducing suffering. I think that's wrong. I think that as a movement, we have bought into the notion, and it's understandable. Our movement comes from the 19th century progressive utilitarian movement that Jeremy Bentham was a part of, that John Mill was a part of. It's part of that progressive thinking that was going on, that dealt with feminism, that dealt with anti-slavery, that dealt with children's rights. What our movement is comes out of that. But what that was, as I talked about this morning, was this idea that animals matter, they can suffer, and because they can suffer, they matter morally. However, they don't care that we kill them. They only care about how we treat them and how we kill them, because unlike us, they don't have an interest in their lives. I think that's wrong. I think Bentham was wrong when he said it. I think Singer's wrong when he says it. I think Tom Reagan is wrong when he says that animals have fewer opportunities for satisfaction than humans do. I think that's wrong. I think it's totally speciesist. And I think what we've done is we've linked the whole idea of the moral value of animal life with human-like cognition. And I'm telling you, I cannot see the justification for that. As between the person with math ability and the person who doesn't have math ability, whom do you use as an unconsenting subject in a biomedical experiment? The answer is you don't use either of them. So this business, this focus, this fetish that we have, that we look at cognition, great apes matter more, elephants matter more, dolphins matter more, and then what happens to the fish and what happens to the chickens? You know, the cows and the pigs are sort of in between, but the animal that we exploit most, the animals we exploit most, chickens and sea animals, basically. We don't even think about it. We have people like Peter Singer saying, I don't think it's a tragedy that we kill millions of chickens every day. I just don't see that as a tragedy on the level of the tragedy that would be if you were killing human beings. And the answer is, yeah, that's what you say, Peter, but if you were a chicken, you'd have a different perspective. So I think, you know, we've really got to move away from that. And I think that the whole welfare movement focuses on this to the exclusion, you know, focuses on the treatment notion, doesn't focus on the use notion. But when we moved, when we talk about the practical problems with the welfare movement, I do not believe animal welfare does it as an empirical matter provide significantly greater protection for the interests of non-human animals? I think not. I think the difference between what the reformists want, what we've got now, it's like saying, well, you know, we think that waterboarding people in Guantanamo Bay is a bad idea, so let's put some padding on the waterboarding. or you know, let's make it better somehow. I mean, let's put padding on the waterboard, let's paint the rooms, let's play pleasant music. Would that make it better? Yeah, I guess, maybe. But is that what we should be focusing on? Certainly, the welfare reforms that are being promoted by all, and I mean all, of the large animal groups in this country, in Europe, in South America, are all basically putting padding on waterboards. I do not believe that there is any empirical evidence to indicate that animal welfare reforms are driving up costs so that demand is coming down. I've seen some claims that some studies show that welfare reforms cause demand to go down. That's, in my judgment, complete nonsense. The study that I've seen cited, I've read the whole thing, not just a summary of it. I've sat down with statisticians, I've gone through it. It's nonsense. It doesn't hold that at all. It basically says that we're eating more and more animals every year, but that there's been a small decrease with pigs and maybe chickens. That there's been a small that the consumption of pigs and chickens, not cow, pigs and chickens haven't gone up as much. It's gone up, but not as much as one would have predicted given consumer trends. But there is no claim, nor could there be a claim. You'd have to have a lot more empirical data to be able to link any consumption patterns like that to welfare campaigns. You know, furthermore, when people are not eating chicken or pork, it doesn't mean they're eating tofu. It means they're shifting their purchasing choices to processed foods that have pork and processed foods that have chicken. Okay? So this idea that, well, if we make the price go up, we're going to make the demand go down, the answer is, you can make the price go up, but that doesn't mean people eat tofu and broccoli. It just means they change their pattern, their consumption patterns to other animal products. Okay, but there's no empirical evidence that animal welfare reforms are driving up costs. If anything, the evidence we have is that animal welfare reform actually increases production efficiency. For example, look at veal crates. Veal crates, terrible thing. All these veal, you know, these campaigns get veal calves out of veal crates. The reality is, if you take the veal calves out of the veal crates and put them in smaller social units, you actually reduce dramatically the veterinary cost that you incur. So it's actually cost effective. Same thing with gestation crates. If you use electronic sow feeding, you actually will reduce pig mortality, you'll increase sow productivity, and you actually increase, you make animal exploitation more economically efficient. This is not, people, this is not going to cause consumption to go down. It's not going to cause demand to go down. All this is doing is making exploitation more efficient. And the other thing that it's doing, and I think this is just devastatingly bad, is it's making everybody more comfortable.
And here we have Bruce Friedrich's response.
I just want to start by saying that Gary and I agree on probably 90% of what he just said. We agree that cognition is not the issue, capacity to suffer, and valuing your life is the issue, and other animals share those basic capacities with us. We also agree that animals' lives matter, and they matter to them, just like our lives matter to us. So as Will said in the introduction, I've been a vegan, abolitionist, animal rights activist for 25 years. And where Gary and I disagree is on whether we should be actively opposing welfare reforms. And he feels, as he just eloquently laid out, that they are counterproductive to helping animals and that they are basically valueless. I feel the exact opposite of that. I think both that they are meaningful for animals, and I also think that they lead us toward abolition. So, Gary, you know, a lot of people have been talking about this as a debate, and people talk about this, you know, dichotomy, welfare versus rights. And I just want to point out that that those of us who support welfare reforms, most of us are also doing, you know, mostly vegan abolitionist advocacy. We just also think that the welfare reforms are worth supporting, both for themselves, both because they're good for animals, and if these were human beings in these sorts of situations, we would not be opposing welfare reforms for them. and also because we think that it changes the playing field. It moves us from a society in which animals do have interests that don't have interests that matter to a society in which animals do have interests that matter, and that leads us toward a more compassionate society for all animals and also more vegans. We agree, veganism should be the moral baseline. At Farm Sanctuary, we spend our lives with farm animals, and we know them as individuals. We prioritize chickens, we prioritize fish, we prioritize cows and pigs. And we attempt to apply the golden rule across the species barrier. If I were this animal in a battery cage, if I were this animal in a gestation crate, if I were this animal being boiled alive, would I want people to be attempting to get me out of that crate or that cage, or to not have me boiled alive? We think asking the question basically answers it. Then the second thing that we agree on is that most vegans are going to be most effective at helping animals by advocating diet change. And that's why Mercy for Animals, Vegan Outreach, Farm Sanctuary, Compassion Over Killing, the groups that Gary thinks shouldn't be supporting the welfare reforms, spend 90 to 100% of their actual budget and time advocating veganism as Gary supports. We just also think that the welfare reforms are worth supporting. So the question before us, really, where Gary and I disagree, is whether abolitionists should oppose campaigns for improvement. And we believe that we should support them because they help animals and because they move us closer to abolition. If you were a pig in a crate and you had the opportunity and you were not able to turn around for your entire lives, try to put yourself in Nikki's place. Try to imagine the psychological and the physical torment of not being able to turn around for your entire life. And then imagine what it would mean to you to not be forced to live in those sorts of situations. Oftentimes, people who oppose welfare reforms point out that the welfare reforms don't save the animals, and that, for example, these pigs are still mutilated without pain relief. These pigs are still going to be crammed onto transport trucks and taken 36, 48 hours to slaughterhouses. These pigs are still going to be violently slaughtered at slaughterhouses. And all that is true. And I agree with Gary that we shouldn't be minimizing the suffering of animals. But I also think that if we apply the golden rule, if these were human beings in these crates, and we didn't have the opportunity to demand that they were fully liberated, but we could get them out of the crates, I don't think anybody in this room would hesitate for 1 second before saying, at the very least, we shouldn't oppose getting them out of the crates. Proposition 2, which passed in 2008 in California, banned gestation crates, field crates, and battery cages. And it takes effect January 1st, 2015. It takes some time. But January 1st, 2015, gestation crates are illegal in California, field crates are illegal in California, and barren battery cages are illegal in California. And for the millions of animals who are getting out of those crates who are still going to suffer miserably, but who are not going to suffer the physiological and psychological torment of their entire lives, unable even to take a step or turn around, you know, if you were the animals involved, that is something that you would want. We slaughter about 9 billion chickens in this country every single year. Every one of these animals is still conscious when their throats are slit open. Millions of them are literally boiled alive every single year. They are snapped into metal shackles while they're still completely conscious. Electric shock, their throats are slit open. Hundreds of millions have their body cavities sliced open, or their wings sliced off, or a leg sliced off. And so People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals has been leading the charge to try to stop 9 billion animals from being boiled alive every single year. And they would still die, obviously, but if you're the animal involved, the difference between being boiled alive and not being boiled alive, when the alternative is not your freedom or being boiled alive, the alternative is being boiled alive or not being boiled alive. At the very least, it seems to me that the animal rights activists don't oppose those campaigns. Even as if we as individuals, the best thing for us to do is to work on veganism, which is where most of my time is put. But we don't oppose campaigns to stop animals from being boiled alive. This isn't, you know, pads on the paddles or painting the walls or playing music. This is a significant difference for the animals involved. And then the last thing I want to say is I also think that Gary is wrong. The evidence is that a culture that says we don't care at all about chickens, we don't care at all about animal welfare, is going to be a culture where it's impossible to have conversations with people about complete liberation. There are more than 1,000 studies that detail the fact that if first you get somebody to do something small, they are far more likely than to do something big. So Gary just mischaracterizes, I'm sure he read it, it must have been a while ago, the Kansas State study, which absolutely does show, and it does say that media attention to animal welfare issues has resulted in significant negative effects on U.S. meat demand. High-profile ballot initiatives like Proposition 2 decreased consumption. And the theory behind that is that as people are forced to think about these issues and confront these issues, they become extraordinarily uncomfortable with their own cognitive dissonance, which allows them to say, I care about animal welfare, and yet I'm paying people to torture and kill animals so that I can eat them. You have to go through the rest of the alphabet to get from A to Z. The countries and cultures that have no animal welfare regulations have no vegans and no animal rights activists. The countries and cultures that have the most animal welfare regulations have the most vegans and animal welfare activists.
Those were some powerful words from two very well-known animal rights advocates, Gary Francione and Bruce Friedrich, at the National Animal Rights Conference in 2013 this year. You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio Station in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Now on to some news. So today, the Sacramento Bee reported that animal rights groups sue State Fair over pig exhibit. This was one of their stories published today. This happened in the Bay Area. The Animal Legal Defense Fund is suing the State Fair over confinement of nursing and pregnant pigs in an exhibit at the fair. The pigs were in farrowing crates, which is standard practice in the agriculture animal industry in California. The Animal Legal Defense Fund is requesting alternative caging that would allow the animals to nest and have space to roam around. And they're also recommending a video feed of the pigs giving birth instead of transporting pregnant pigs. Think of that what you will, but this was a prominent story from a group advocating for animals.
And this happened in California. I just found it a bit ironic that these animal agriculture people are showcasing a practice, gestation crates, that has actually been it's getting outlawed because it's cruel.
Yeah,
so
they're actually
2015. It'll be outlawed.
Yeah, they're outlawing gestation crates, but farrowing crates are another type of crate that is part of the exhibit, which is standard practice and is not due to be outlawed yet. However, it is highlighting the cruel practices of their industry. So I'm not really sure why they would display that, but that's for the State Fair in California to decide. Also in the news this week, the Times of India reported yesterday that FIAPO, the Federation of Indian Animal Protection Organizations, has appealed to the Animal Welfare Board of India, and they are trying to change the laws there to add amendments to the existing Prevention of Cruelty to Animals Act to extend protection to animals that are exploited and made to perform in circuses. Now, India actually outlawed the use of wild animals in circuses in the 1990s, which led to protection and decreased exploitation of lions, bears, monkeys, and panthers. However, animals like a hippopotamus that died recently, which sparked the article, have not been protected. So they're trying to expand the laws there, which is pretty cool.
I find it very cool, actually. Like, India, I was there last year. You didn't know that? Okay, I was in India last year. Listen to our two India shows that I produced. But I find it really interesting. It's a dichotomy because India in some ways really protects and reveres their animals. But then when you go there, there's a lot of problems there. But there's going to be problems everywhere you go, right? But I do have to say that I commend them for having it in their constitution. It's a pretty distinct part in their constitution that they protect animals, and it seems like from what you're saying, they're looking to do more with that. They're looking to change it to make things even better for the animals. So you have to commend that. At least they're trying.
Go India. Now, to bring it home, some local news. Daya Foods has launched some new products that you might have heard about. They have new slices, which are like cheese alternative slices, which are dairy-free and gluten-free.
You posted photos yesterday. Yeah, I did hear about it via the internet.
I was creeping. So those products, and also their new cream cheese alternatives, which again are dairy-free, no animal suffering involved. Those are available at Carmivore in New West and Donald's Market, also in New West. And Choices has announced that they will soon be featuring those products as well. So I'm very excited.
That's pretty cool, breaking local news. And I have a little bit of breaking news, too, is the Daiya cheese pizza is also going to be coming out in September.
Oh, so. I've actually tried one in New York.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was good.
Oh, really?
But okay. I burnt it. That was
and
my bad.
I talked about that later. I have some questions about it. But they were doing some demo samples last month at Choices Market, and my sister grabbed one, but they're not going to sell them until September, so they're making us wait for that. Well, thank you for that news, Jenny. Moving on now, back to the summer conferences. So when I was planning my trip to the States for the AR conference, I decided on a whim to see if there was anything else going on in the area that I could stay for in order to prolong the enjoyment of my vacation. So guess what I found? I discovered that the 39th annual Vegetarian Summerfest conference was taking place just 3 days after, and it was only a 3-hour drive away. So what are the chances of that? I had never attended the Vegetarian Summerfest before, but after perusing the program schedule from 2012 earlier this year and seeing all the amazing talks that had happened at it, I knew that I had to put this one on my bucket list and that this was going to be happening for me this year, since it was going to entail basically hardly any extra cost for the transportation. Vegetarian Summerfest is kind of what it sounds like. It's a festival, or rather conference, of all things vegetarian, or rather vegan, that takes place every year and is known affectionately by its attendees as Vegan Summer Camp. This year's conference took place from July 3rd to 7th in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, and it's organized by the North American Vegetarian Society. The 5-day conference attracted 800 attendees who took part in attending a myriad of presentations and activities, ranging from all kinds of animal advocacy talks to cooking demonstrations to health and wellness workshops to talks on just the vegan lifestyle in general, and also various fitness classes like Zumba and yoga, all presented by many leaders in the community of veganism. So unlike the AR conference, which offers a mere 4 talks, different talks per hour, the people who run Vegetarian Summerfest make it even more difficult for you to decide what to see during the day, and they offer a total of 8 different talks or activities per session to attend. So imagine that. It was a huge challenge for me to have to decide each hour which speaker I most wanted to see, and honestly, I would just leave it to the last minutes to make my final decision depending on how I felt at that moment. Did I feel like watching a cooking demo, for example, or did I feel like being educated on a particular animal rights issue? Vegetarian Summerfest, as I said, it attracted many of the main players in the vegan advocacy community, not just animal rights people, which draws the AR people to the AR conference, but also many health professionals and vegan cooking experts as well. For example, I got to attend a wonderful cheesemaking demo by Miyoko Shinner, and that was a highlight for me because I've been, I've been actively making her cheeses this year, and so getting to see all the little tips and tricks right from the source, that was really cool. Also, highlights of speakers for me were Dr. John McDougall, who gave a 2-hour talk on health and nutrition, which was just amazing and informative. He is the foremost authority on vegan health and nutrition and wellness, I would say, and he gave this talk, like you saw it in the program, 2 hours. Wow, someone's going to talk for 2 hours. It was so interesting and engaging, and it elicited a standing ovation, as did Rich Roll's talk. Rich Roll was there, who I also love. We had him on the show last year, and I've been following him on his podcast since then. He's a vegan Ultraman triathlete and very popular in the vegan vegan community and mainstream health and fitness community, and he was there to give a great keynote talk. So there were just really some wonderful speakers there. I would say that Vegetarian Summerfest could be a life changer for anyone who is not yet vegan, and I wish I could take my parents to this conference because it would dramatically change their lives with all the expert and irrefutable health information on veganism alone that is presented at this event by knowledgeable doctors and dietitians. It's 5 days of packed information on all aspects of the vegan lifestyle that you are not going to get anywhere else. So today we're going to play for you 3 short clips of some of the talks that I attended and enjoyed at Vegetarian Summerfest. The first clip is of Dr. Milton Mills' talk entitled, "Are Humans Designed to Eat Meat?" In this clip, he explains the anatomical makeup and utility of the carnivore tooth and jaw structure versus that of an herbivore. And here it is.
And human teeth, You see, we have spade-like incisors that are great for peeling fruit, cropping off pieces of salad and other plant tissues. Our canine teeth are reduced in size and have a flattened structure and function really as accessory incisors. They are utterly useless for ripping and tearing anything other than an envelope, okay? You know, when people say to me, well, if I'm not going to eat meat, what do I have to eat? I'm like, you know what? You bring down a cow and rip it apart, then I'll give you, you know, I'll let you have it. Otherwise, shut up. It's like, I mean, people say the silliest things. The molars are flattened and nodular. And again, remember when I showed that picture of what I showed, and you guys will see this a little later, was that the jaws of carnivores, when they close, the upper molars, which are flattened and blade-like, slide past the lower molars in a vertical fashion to give you a nice slicing motion. In herbivores, the molars slide across one another horizontally to give you grinding. Okay, so you've got slicing versus grinding. Clearly, our molars slide across each other horizontally to give us nice grinding platforms. Again, we talked about where the jaw joint was in carnivores. Who remembers where the jaw joint is in a carnivore? Is it above or on the same plane as the teeth?
Same plane.
Same plane as the teeth, so that the teeth are acting like a pair of shears. Whereas in the herbivores, the jaw joint has moved to a position above the level of the teeth, giving the lower jaw an L shape so that when it closes, the upper and lower molars come together flat on top of one another, and that's what gives you these long extended grinding platforms. The area of the mandible or lower jaw called the angle here is expanded because the muscles that operate the jaw in herbivores, the primary muscles are the masseters and the pterygoids. The pterygoids are on the inside of the jaw. They hold the jaw in a sling-like arrangement and pull it backwards and forwards and gives you that nice grinding motion. And the jaw can also move forward and backwards, whereas in carnivores, it can't. And this is just a slide showing a comparison of the different jaws. So again, you see here with the carnivores, the jaw joint on the same plane as the cheek teeth, giving you jaws that act like a pair of shears. You see these upper molars or carnassial teeth slide completely past the lower ones, giving you the slicing motion. They have a long dagger-like canines. Their incisors are pointed like little pegs, and even their premolars are shaped like little blades. And the angle of the mandible is not expanded because the muscles that attach here don't do very much. The major muscle operating the lower jaw in carnivores is these giant temporalis muscles that hold the jaw very tightly and give them a very stable jaw, and that's what allows them to run up, grab something, rustle it down, and tear it apart. Whereas in the herbivores, like the horse and the human, expanded angle of the mandible, jaw joint above the plane of the teeth, flat and nodular molars, and these spade-like incisors. And you notice, even horses have little canines. And they're not out trying to rustle anything to the ground and chew it and tear it apart. So that's why I asked the question, whose teeth are most like ours? Very simple, very obvious.
So for our second clip, we have a piece from former dairy farmer turned vegan activist Harold Brown's talk entitled The Interconnectedness of Life. In this excerpt, Harold discusses how killing people and killing animals are actually the same in terms of the psychological effects that they leave, and that we are all in the same playing field, and so we should be encouraged to tell our stories to others when advocating on behalf of the animals.
When people say that killing people and killing animals are very different things, they're not. People who work in meatpacking, that work on kill lines, they suffer from PTSD. I have PTSD. We have to deal with this because you come to a point in your therapy or working through this stuff that you realize either you're dealing with the overt wrongness of it and trying to figure out how to deal with that, or you work through it and beyond it, you transcend it, and you realize, I'm more than this. The hardest part for me is learning to forgive myself. And the thing is that until you do the internal work, until you wrestle with your demons, until you go through your dark nights, you don't know what your passion is. A lot of people say, well, you know, I haven't found my passion yet in acting and so on. You will. But first you have to be at peace with yourself. You got to love yourself. The understanding in Taoism and Buddhism that we are organic patterns of energy. Everything is just an organic pattern of energy. We're just starting to verify that through electron microscopes and quantum physics, quantum theory, that we're all just organic patterns of energy. So if you keep that in mind, we have so much more in common with each other than we don't. And because somebody is still eating animals doesn't make them a bad person. It makes a person who still is on their journey. And you're there to be their mentor, to be their nurturer. I don't like using the word teacher. Teaching in the United States, our idea of what teaching is, tends to be more of a, what I'm doing now, gagging at you and dumping information on you. That's not teaching, that's not learning. Hugging is learning. You know, sharing is learning. And being emotionally honest is learning. Because your story, and this is something I think we undervalue, is that your personal story is the most important, most powerful thing that you'll ever share with another person. You all have unique stories. You all have unique journeys. And when you talk to people, no matter what the issue or what it is you're talking about, if you share your story, it'll make all the difference in the world.
And finally, the third clip is from Karen Davis's talk entitled Moving Beyond the Rhetoric of Apology of Animal Rights to Affirmative Activism. In this clip, longtime animal activist Karen Davis warns against the rhetoric of animal abusers and maintains that confidence is a necessary quality to possess in the face of protecting animals. She also makes the point that we need to focus our resources as best as we can for the work that we choose to do for the animals.
So one of the things we see is that the rhetoric of exploitation in animal rights is the same as the rhetoric of exploitation in all forms of rhetoric of exploitation. Abusers and oppressors tend to make the same types of arguments to justify the abuse and oppression they're imposing upon their victims. We are told that human beings are capable of knowing just about anything we want to know except what it feels like to be one of our victims. Intellectual confidence is needed here, not submission to the epistemological deficiencies, cynicism, and intimidation tactics of profiteers. What I'm saying is confidence is a necessary part of advocacy. You have to be confident. You have to know your subject, and you can't let others beat you up and bully you and try to shut you up and go away, because anybody who's exploiting somebody for profit, whether they're non-human animals or human animals, they're going to do everything to put you on the defensive and make you feel like you're crazy. That's why you don't want to say, yeah, I know everybody thinks I'm crazy, but they're trying to make you feel like you're crazy because you care about a chicken. And so that's why it can become so easy to feel, well, maybe I am crazy. But no, you're not. Nobody is ever crazy for caring about a fellow creature. Nobody is ever crazy for that. Nobody is ever crazy because they're suffering and grieving over what a fellow creature is enduring at the hands of an abuser. We should never apologize for that. If the apologists have to be the other side. They're the ones who have to have the obligation to apologize to their victims. We care deeply about many things, but we cannot devote all of our primary time and energy to all of them. We have to focus our attention and direct our resources, our biological resources, time, temporal resources, financial, everything. We have to. So we can't address everything. We can never take on the entire world. So we have to make some choices and some decisions. It's just what we're faced with as individuals with limited time, limited resources, etc. It doesn't mean we don't care about other issues. It doesn't mean that we can't do something. At least, as Thoreau said, if you can't be an activist on behalf of ending animal slavery, at least you can wash your own hands of it. Liberate your own slaves. So you can do something. But in the meantime, we have to decide where we best direct our talents. And we have to give it our all. Once you decide you are going to be an animal rights activist or you are going to devote yourself to focusing on animals in laboratories or animals in factory farming, and you're going to find that your space of life is going to fill up amazingly. You are going to find that when you get into the details of your particular advocacy passion, it is going to absorb your time and energy. And that is going to be your focus in life. And that's an individual thing for each person. You can't feel guilty because you can't do everything.
Those were some great talks from Milton Mills, Carol Brown, and that last one was Karen Davies speaking at the Vegetarian Summerfest 2013 in Pennsylvania.
Harold Brown.
Oh, Harold.
That was a man.
Surprise. I thought that sounded funny. I was like, that doesn't make sense. Silly Jenny. Some not-so-silly announcements now. You're listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Thank you for tuning in. If you'd like more Animal Voices this week, you can check us out on Facebook by searching Animal Voices or by visiting our website, animalvoices.org. We're also on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR on Twitter. So next week we're going to be doing a show related to my travels in New York and what it's like to be a vegan in New York City. So please tweet and Facebook us your questions and comments related to being vegan in New York. We'd love to hear from you and to cover things that interest you on the show next week. And now Allison's going to tell us a little bit about a song we're going to hear.
Yeah, this song is a song that I've had going on and on in my head basically for the last 3 weeks. It's so catchy. It's such a catchy tune. It's a live recording of a song that was performed at the Vegetarian Summerfest. One great thing about this conference is that there's just a lot of creativity happening at it, a lot of like musical performances and that, and it's just really awesome to hear fellow animal advocates and vegans on stage singing their hearts out for the animals. So this song is called Animal Free. It's by Vance Lemko, who is actually the lead person of the band Green Beings, who our listeners, regular listeners, might be familiar with because we've played their CD on the show many times. This is a brand new song that they're going to be debuting on their new CD, Animal Free. Thank you for tuning in this week, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Yeah. me.